This is a love and money edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Financial advisor Kevin McKinley will offer some information and advice that might be of particular interest to married couples or those who are thinking about it, including the financial and legal benefits of tying the knot. And we will welcome your personal finance questions for Kevin at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money LLC, and he joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Joy.
Well, this is a special Valentine's Day inspired edition of On Your Money, and I know that we are going to talk about some financial aspects of love and marriage and relationships. And where are we going to start, Kevin?
Well, let's start with the economic effect on the marriage rate. The current rate, according to the Pew Trust, is this is the number of people in the country who are getting married or do get married in a particular year. In 2015, it was 6.9 per thousand. That's down from a high of 11 in 1981, and it's been almost straight down ever since. And the median age of people who are getting married for the first time is also at an all-time high. According to Pew 2016, the median age for men in their first marriage was 29.5 years old, and women was 27.4 years old. And they point to the cause of people going to college, more of them going to college longer, staying in college, getting higher education, and some people choosing to live together rather than making it legal with a marriage license. But the survey also said that 34% of 25 to 34-year-olds say they are not financially ready for that commitment.
Wow. So let's talk a little bit about finances and choosing a mate. Is there a financial aspect to choosing your partner?
Generally, there probably always will be, and there certainly always has been, going back thousands of years to the tradition of the dowry, where one member of the couple, their family, would give 40 cattle or something to the other member's family in exchange for the hand in marriage. And again, the Pew Trust survey says that a lot of us judge our potential mate by income and profession. Women said that 78% of them said that having a steady job is very important in a potential mate. Men only said 62% of them said that same thing. And Bankrate had a survey that came out that said 43% of women and 32% of men said that the other partner's credit score would be very important in terms of whether they would decide to make a commitment to that person. 43% of women, 32% of men.
Huh. I don't know if that crossed my mind 31 years ago.
Was there a credit score back then?
I don't think there was.
No, there wasn't. Now maybe you should go back in and check on it. Maybe you made a terrible mistake.
I didn't. I know, because I see mine. I'm sure it's affected by his, too. Talk a little bit about there is actually a financial benefit to getting married, Kevin.
Yeah, again, generally speaking, a guy named Jay Zagorski from Ohio State University studied it, and he found that people who are married generally have two times as much wealth over their lifetime than people, similar circumstances, jobs, etc., who don't get married, and then four times if you consider that they're combining the income and the assets by the time one of them passes away, the other one inherits. Interestingly, he found that if you do get divorced, you actually end up worse off than if you had just stayed single the entire time. But the question of whether or not there is a financial benefit to getting married is kind of a chicken and the egg, because, is it because the marriage makes you more prosperous, or does it make you, are you the kind of person who's going to work harder, save more money, spend less money, earn more money, and you're also the kind of person who wants to be married, and you're therefore an attractive partner to another person? Or do you just feel the pressure? Do you say, I'm in this partnership, I'm in this relationship, and maybe have children and a spouse that I have to support, therefore that's why I have to work harder, that's why I have to save more money for not only myself to eat tonight, but for college for the kids, or retirement for my partner and myself.
Speaking of money and marriage and families, I hear you have a brand new On Your Money mini money booklet for next week's membership drive. What's in this one, Kevin?
We're very excited about this. It is brand new, never produced before. It's called On Your Money for Parents and Grandparents. It is for people who are concerned of children of all ages, from before birth to adulthood. We talk about estate planning issues, life insurance, the decision on working versus staying at home to take care of the kids, how to develop healthy money habits in your kids, kids choosing a college, paying for college, and it'll be available to those who pledge at any single dollar amount next Tuesday, and then will be rebroadcast next Saturday as well. Again, pledge any dollar amount during that membership drive and get a copy of the On Your Money Mini Money Booklet, On Your Money for Parents and Grandparents.
Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. You should consult with your financial advisor prior to making any investment decisions. If you have a personal finance question for Kevin, you can call right now at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Again, we are focusing mostly on issues of love and money and issues that might be of particular interest to married couples or couples in love, but pretty much accept anything. Let's take a call from Doug in Stevens Point. Hi, Doug.
Hi. My question was about what if one person in the couple relationship had good credit and the other one had less than good credit? How does that actually work out? Does it just average out?
Yeah, that's the way it should work, right, Doug? Well, it kind of does average out because whenever it really only matters when you go to apply for a loan. And it matters to a lesser extent in terms of your insurance rates. Your auto insurance can be affected by your credit score, and so that can hurt you or help you, depending on the score. So when you go to apply for a loan, that's one factor that lenders consider when you are applying for a loan. But the other one is your income, and your credit history is obviously part of that as well, and then your overall debt. So if you need the income from the other person, then it's a good idea to try to combine both of the applicants in the loan application. But if you say, well, the person doesn't have very much income and has a better credit score, then you're probably going to be better off getting the loan on your own.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. You know, we often get questions from listeners on issues like this. We have a question that's really a composite of ones that we often receive, especially from young adults. It goes like this. I am about to get married to someone with a lot of student loan debt. How can I protect my financial situation and keep us in the best shape to buy a home within a few years? So do you have a composite answer to that one, Kevin?
Well, let's start with the positives of the situation. If it's someone who has a lot of student loans, a lot can be a relative term. The median dollar amount for graduating undergraduate students who have student debt is about $28,000 right now. It's about $42,000 for MBAs, $50,000 for people with master's degrees, $140,000 for law school, and $160,000 for med school. So, $20,000 or $30,000 might sound like a lot. It is if it's lying on the floor, but in the big picture, it's really not that much relative to other people who have student loans out. And student loan debt, I'm much less concerned about it, and lenders will be much less concerned about it than they would be if it were credit card debt, in part because credit card debt generally charges a higher interest rate, and usually the credit card balances are charged up because the people are spending more money than they have, or because they ran into some kind of financial emergency for it. And if they've rang up a lot of student loan debt and they're trying to use that to get a better job and a higher income, that can actually be a very wise investment.
Yeah. So a couple should probably talk about their finances before marriage, right?
Please do that. If it were up to me, there would be a law that you would have to sit down and have a 1 hour of financial counseling with somebody before you get married, just to talk about money issues and to say, yes, we're in love, but this is a partnership, and we're going to have to treat it as such, almost like a business partnership. If you wouldn't go into business with that person, you probably shouldn't marry that person either. Sit down and talk about how much can we afford to pay on that student loan debt and then still eat. And where are the payments going to come from? Is it just going to be from the borrower's income, or is it going to be from both? And either one is fine. You just have to reach some kind of agreement. And then finally, what sacrifices are we going to make so that we can whittle that debt around down and get into a better situation? Are one or both of the people going to work more? Are they going to take a second job? Are they going to cut down on their spending? Maybe even, you know, we've had several stories of people who have moved back in with their parents just because they want to save some money and pay down debt. And keep in mind that whatever measures you take, even if it's a year or 2 years that you have to take an extra job, move back in with your parents, it's only temporary. And it's a really short-term goal. And after you're old in your 30s and 40s, you have completely forgotten about this. And in the older you get, the more you'll actually look back on this fondly.
Yeah. Getting back to our composite email question, what about young married couples and buying a home?
Yeah, again, as we mentioned before to Doug, debt is just one of the factors, and they're also going to consider the income, the credit score, and the down payment. So what I'd like to see Doug and other people do is go and actually check your scores at a place like myfico.com. You have to pay about $20 to see a score and from one bureau, and then three times that for all three bureaus. You can go to other places. Maybe your lender might offer a free credit score check, or your bank or credit union, and then talk to the lender right now. You know, there's nothing wrong with going into lender and saying, we are not ready to buy a house today, but we would like to in a year or two. Can you please look at our situation and tell us, you know, what opinion you would give on us, or approval would you give on us today versus what we can do in over the next year or two to get into a situation where you are more likely to get yes. And if you want to buy it sooner, again, you're going to probably have to use the better person's income and the better person's better credit scores income, but you're also going to be able to afford much less of a home than if you can combine both incomes.
Kevin McKinley is a financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money LLC. If you have a question for him, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is a special Valentine's Day inspired edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. This I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other.
This is a love and marriage edition of On Your Money, talking about the issues faced by those in love and married couples, and we'll talk some about handling marital money disagreements coming up in the program. I'm Joy Cardine, along with financial planner Kevin McKinley. Do you have a personal finance question for him? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Our next caller is Amy in Heartland. Hi, Amy.
Hi there. I was just wondering, we're getting married in October and have about $5,000 set aside for expenses, and our parents are helping us out as well. But we were told by friends that we're just recently married, what we should do is put all of our wedding expenses on a credit card so we keep with good rewards, so we can pay those off and get like free flights or hotels. And I was just wondering if, one, that's a good idea, and two, if there's a credit card with a great rewards program that you would recommend.
And congratulations, by the way, Amy.
Yeah, well, they haven't done it yet. October's a long ways away. No, Amy, congratulations and good for you. And isn't that a little annoying when you have those friends who've been married for like two more months than you have? And they're like, oh, well, let me tell you, that's what we used to think. But let me tell you how it actually works. Here's what you do. And that's not the worst idea in the world, as long as you handle it responsibly. And then, more importantly, you make the payments and pay it off as quickly as possible. There's a great website called creditcards.com, and we'll have a link up to it at onyourmoney.com that you can go to, and you can search for credit cards by rewards, and you can apply there. And I think the one that they usually like, there's a Capital One rewards card that you have to have very good credit. The terms are pretty good on it otherwise, but they give you, for your first $3,000 or something that you apply on, they give you like 40,000 points or miles or something that you can then use to travel on. Just be really careful with a couple of things. Like I mentioned, make sure you pay it off quickly, because otherwise the interest on credit cards typically can outweigh the benefit if you leave the balance go for more than 2 or 3 months. Watch for any fees that they charge to open the account, keep it open, establish it, make any cash transfers. And then finally, note that if you charge up a bunch of money on this credit card and don't pay it off, it will affect the other debt you have, and again, your other auto insurance rates, homeowners insurance rates, what have you, and make it more difficult to borrow money in the future. So make sure that if you're doing this, you keep that money set aside. And when you do have wedding expenses come up, they're always going to come up more than what you planned. And so be very careful about making sure that you pay it off if you are charging it up just to get the rewards.
Do you have, Kevin, some advice on how to find a good rewards card, a place to go to compare and contrast?
Yeah, creditcards.com. We'll put that up at onyourmoney.com, too.
All right. Good luck, Amy. Best wishes. Oliver emails, my 403B investments track the Dow pretty closely. If I want to use my 403B as a safety net during an upcoming period of unemployment, would you advise moving those investments in order to minimize loss rather than maximize gain? Or is that something which my investment manager, TIAA, would do automatically should the market slow or reverse track?
And for better or for worse, Oliver, this is on you. And you get most people who have what are known as defined contribution plans. These are 401ks or 403bs at work. There's usually a wide array of investment choices you can make from a roster of mutual funds. But you get to choose. The good news is you have more freedom to choose. The bad news is you have more freedom to fail. And so, no, it's not usually their responsibility to manage it. And it's something that if you do indeed tend to use it and you think that you are not going to have any income, yes, you definitely want to be more conservative, because I'd say that anyway. You know, when you're making decisions on asset allocation, you have to look at two factors: what's going on in the world and what's going on in your life. And both factors would say that it's probably a better time to be more conservative rather than less conservative. In the world, we have all-time highs on many stock market indices, and we have a situation where interest rates are very low. The Federal Reserve may be raising interest rates. And frankly, we've had about an 8-year, almost straight-up expansion in the economy. And that all those things may certainly continue, but they're less likely to continue now than they would have been 8 years ago. And then, Oliver, you are now going to be looking for money to spend, not looking to have it saved and invested and hopefully growing. So I'd much rather have you be more conservative now rather than more aggressive.
Next, we go to Josh in Green Bay. Hello, Josh. What's your question?
Yes. My wife has recently started a photography business, and we were told last year by our tax lady that so she's providing a service with her business that she doesn't need to collect sales tax. And I, with my wife, have been doing some more research, and it appears that it needs to be done. And we just wanted to follow up to see if we need to be collecting sales tax or not.
Right. That's a great question, Josh. And how's the business going so far?
It's doing fairly well.
Okay, good. You are a good spouse, too. The mark of a good spouse, in my mind, is someone who permits, allows, cooperates, and supports a partner starting a business, because it's very aggravating and it can be very expensive, especially at first. So good for you. I'm glad to hear that. What I would do is I would actually go right to the horse's mouth and call the Wisconsin Department of Revenue, and they'll answer your question for free. They'll tell you exactly what you are in for in terms of a service. I don't doubt the tax person's knowledge or information, because I don't know the tax person, but it's good to find out exactly through. And people, when, you know, a lot of people are concerned about calling the IRS or the Department of Revenue and worried about, you know, triggering some kind of investigation or whatever. These people are just doing their jobs, and all they're trying to do is collect the money that we owe in taxes. They're not going to kick down your door in the middle of the night and confiscate your wife's cameras or anything, unless you don't pay your taxes. But if you're honestly trying to pay the taxes, they'll help you through it. And people dumber than you in worse situations have already called them this morning with dumber questions. And so don't feel bad about saying, look, we're doing this and we just want to make sure we're adhering to the law the way it should be, and they'll be more than happy to help you out.
And so, Josh, does your wife take like wedding photographs or portraits, or what does she do?
Yeah, just about everything with families and weddings and events and everything else. So,
all right, well, good luck.
His wife is into photography.
No, is that from a movie, Kevin?
Yes, it is.
All right, let's go to Shelley in Milwaukee. Hi, Shelley.
Morning. I am 58, and my sweetheart is 65, and he makes about a third of the income that I make, and we're debating whether or not there's actually a financial benefit to getting legally married.
Actually, Shelley, there usually is, because We're going to talk about this in a little bit, but it's when you have disparate incomes, when the incomes are wide. You know, if both people make $40,000 a year, usually there's not much benefit to it. In fact, there can be a penalty. But when one person makes, say, $20,000 a year and the other person makes $60,000 a year, because you'll be married and hopefully filing jointly, you'll save thousands of dollars on taxes. In fact, I actually did this for a couple who were clients of mine. They had the same question. They said, you know, if we get married or stay in this current state of cohabitation, what's the cost versus the benefits? And we figured out that they would save enough in taxes in just 1 year to pay for a really nice wedding and a honeymoon afterwards. So don't get married just for that reason, but it's one more reason to do so.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Shelley. Well, you know what? This might be a good time to talk about some of the financial benefits to marriage in our Smart Assets segment. This is Smart Assets during On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine along with financial planner Kevin McKinley, and we are discussing money and marriage this week. And we are going to take a look now at the financial benefits available only to spouses who are legally married. Like what, Kevin?
Well, you know, they say that two can live cheaper than one, and that's may be the case per person, but especially when it comes to the tax code. And these laws may not be fair to people who are in a relationship but not legally married, but they certainly favor matrimony in most cases. And starting with taxes in the income tax rate, 2017, a married couple can make about $100,000 between the two of them and be in the same tax rate as someone who makes about $50,000 of gross income for it. And again, where that big advantage comes from is when their disparate incomes, or even more so when just one partner works outside of the home and makes the money. Between the two of them, they'll pay much less in taxes on the same amount of gross income that if they were to earn it themselves.
So besides taxes, where else do married couples have an advantage?
They get to fund retirement plan contributions even for a non-working spouse. Typically, if you're a single person, you have to have earned income to make a retirement plan contribution. But if you are married to someone who has earned income and they qualify, even if you don't have any earnings yourself, you can still make a spousal contribution to an IRA or a Roth IRA, and it can be up to the other person's earnings or $5,500, whichever is less if you're under 50, and $6,500 if you're over 50. And where this really has a big advantage and an immediate advantage to married couples is when they can make a tax-deductible spousal IRA contribution, because not only do they get money set aside for retirement, but they can save anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000 in taxes just from that spousal IRA contribution.
And there's advantages for married couples in retirement, too?
Absolutely. Not only spouses can qualify for the other person's Social Security benefit, half of it as a spousal Social Security benefit, even if they didn't earn anything at all, but they can get a pension continuation that says, I want a pension payment if the worker has it, where if the pension recipient dies, I still get the same amount of payments because I am their legal partner in the eyes of the law. And then also, in terms of taking over retirement accounts, many times spouses can inherit IRAs and not have to take the money out right away unless they're over 70 and a half. Whereas if that money is passed on to the next generation or a non-spouse, then those people have to start taking it out right away and, in the cases of an IRA, start paying taxes on it.
Is there anything else?
Yeah. In terms of health insurance, if both partners work and are covered by health insurance, they can generally pick and choose which employer benefits are the best for the two of them, although some other employers are actually saying, look, if you choose ours and the other one would have been better, we're going to put a penalty on yours to discourage this practice. And two relatively equal earners, as we said, if we were applying for a loan, they're much more likely to get the loan based on the higher income for a greater house or a car or whatever, based on that more income rather than if they were one person just applying by themselves.
Kevin McKinley is a financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. He joins us just about every week at this time with information and advice on your money. And in honor of Valentine's Day, we are focusing this program on love and marriage and financial issues, and we're welcoming your questions about anything. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. We have a rare open line for you if you have a personal finance question for Kevin. Our next caller is Austin in Grant County. Hi, Austin.
Morning. I bought a farm, I guess, since Valentine's for the love of work, but I can't pay for it just off the farm. So working off the farm, between the two, I don't show any loss. And people tell me that I should buy equipment and stuff like that, and my response is I still have to pay for that equipment throughout the year just to get that tax break. I wonder, is it worth doing that just to go after a tax break at the end of the year?
You have a very good perspective on this, Austin, because you're right. When people make expenditures just for the tax break, hopefully they realize that the expenditure is usually maybe offset 10 to 20, maybe 30% by the tax break, but not much more. And you still have to look upon it as if it's a wise investment for you anyway, not just for the tax benefit. And if it sounds like you're going to be in a lower income bracket going forward, you're probably not going to be in a high tax bracket. Therefore, the tax break is really never going to come home. However, all the costs of doing so are going to be there regardless of your income situation. And so I would definitely not do that just for the tax break. If you need it and you think you're going to be in a higher tax bracket in the future when you can use those expenses, then go ahead and do it. Austin, what I'd really like you to do is, now that you bought this farm, do you have a tax person who helps you?
I do, but she doesn't like to give financial advice, and I guess I'm in a higher tax bracket because of working off the farm as well, mm-hmm. but I have a really aggressive payback for the farm, too. It's a 20-year note, so okay. I'm paying like $1,600 a month just for the mortgage, you know, so to come up with extra money for stuff, like I say, for the tax credit, it, in my mind, didn't make much sense.
Yeah, I don't think it does. I would say this. I would find another tax person, but don't blame the person you have, because I for 25 years was looking for a CPA or someone who would be willing to not just say, here's what you owe in taxes based on your situation from last year, but also say, here are some strategies you can use to do what you need to do, but also reduce what you pay in income taxes, and not just for farms or businesses, but just for regular individuals. And it was very difficult to find CPAs who were good at doing taxes, but also who were comfortable making projections or assumptions on things that weren't actual facts. And I just realized that it's due to the DNA or the genetic makeup of the kinds of people who are interested in doing this for a living. They like accuracy. They like to be exact. And I like that in a CPA, but I also need someone who is willing to make some projections and help out and then, you know, understand and say, look, I'm not going to hold you responsible for this, but give me an idea as to what I might do in the future to go ahead. And in my own practice, I had to become good at it so that I could make these projections, because it's very difficult to find tax people who are willing to kind of go out on a limb a little bit and say, well, we don't know for sure, but this might be a good idea. So you might want to look for a new tax person, but no, don't make the investment just for the tax break.
All right, Austin.
Thank you.
Austin, before you go, though, you said, I think you're trying to tie into our Valentine's Day theme, but you bought this farm because you love farming, really?
Well, you have to if you're going to.
It is for better or for worse and in sickness and health.
That's right.
Well, good luck with it. Thank you for calling. And let's go next to Kelly in Ashland. Hi, Kelly.
Hi. Had a question for you regarding active versus passively managed investments. Wanted to get your thought on that.
Yeah, well, and that definitely ties into discussions on marriage, because those of us who are married know that there are periods of activity and then great periods of passivity, too, as well. So
right.
Appreciate that. Yeah, active management defines when someone puts money into a mutual fund, and it has a person making decisions on buying and which securities to buy and sell. And index or passive investing, just as when someone says, we're going to buy a basket of stocks or bonds that ascribe to a particular index that's been set up by somebody else, and we're not going to make any buys and sells or choices on which ones to buy and sell unless they are added to the index or pulled out of the index. And what the long-term demonstration of the difference between the two has shown is that the active one is more expensive, and generally that higher expense, because they have to pay people, is a drag on performance. And the people generally do not have any advantage over the index, and they can't prove it going forward. They can't say, well, give your money to me, and I will make more money for you than if you were to just invest in this low-cost option. And so since we can know the expenses of mutual funds, and we can't know if this single person is going to do better or worse, I tend to err towards the side of lower-cost index investing rather than passive investing. Not all the time. Sometimes there are some niche investments where there's only a manager who can do it. There's no low-cost index for it. But generally, over the very long term, you're probably better off in a passive index fund than you are with an active manager.
Thanks for the call, Kelly. Chris in Winona, Minnesota is next. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I had a question regarding student loans and taxes and marriage. So I make, me and my girlfriend both have student loans, but I make several times as much as she does. So she qualifies for income-based repayments. However, and I recently learned, you know, if we get married, then we can still file separately and she'll continue to qualify for that income-based repayment. But comparing that with the tax benefits of being married and filing together, I just wanted to know what your advice was on that.
Well, yeah. Did you get your information from IBRinfo.org, Chris? Is that where you went to look for it?
Between that and probably the student loan site.
Okay.
Yeah,
you have to weigh out the difference between the two. And again, much like you shouldn't buy farming equipment just for the tax break, you shouldn't either get married or not get married just because of the financial costs or
right.
benefits for it. But it's good to know what the difference is going to be for it. And I'm guessing because tax rates are quite a bit higher than student loan interest rates, especially if you're making a good living, the benefit is going to come to you more so by getting married and then married filing jointly than it will be by extending by having her participate in the income-based repayment plan. Because, you know, with the income-based repayment plan, you generally still have to pay the loan back sooner or later. It's just you get to lower the payment amount and still stay current with it. And then after a very, very long time, the loans may be forgiven if you've stayed current on the payment for it. So my preference would be to get married, use the tax savings to help pay off that debt and boost up your financial situation.
Good luck, Chris, and congratulations in advance. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. Kevin is a financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money LLC, and this is a special marriage and money edition of On Your Money. When we come back, we are going to talk about marital money disagreements. Maybe you have one. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network. This is a special marriage and money edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine along with financial planner Kevin McKinley. And money is one of the biggest sources of friction with couples, and we are going to discuss some methods that can ease the stress. But first, Kevin, tell us more on why money, how money is such a problem in between couples.
There was a survey conducted by Time Magazine on their money site a couple years ago where they said that 70% of couples said that they do have disagreements about money. And you and I are both married, not to each other, but to yes. other people. We know that disagreement in a marriage typically means a screaming, yelling, knockdown, drag-out fight. So 70% admit to it. That's more than they argue about chores, sex, togetherness, snoring, what's for dinner. And that actually describes, by the way, my agenda for Valentine's Day with my wife tonight. Several surveys have shown that money is a source of contention with many married couples and unmarried couples. And what they really mean is when they say money, we argue about money, they really say we argue about spending. And when they say we argue about spending, they say the other person I'm with spends money on dumb things. And this creates a problem because in many marriages and relationships, there are two kinds of people. There is a spender and there is a saver. And they tend to be attracted to each other, not in terms of, you know, wildly opposed attitudes, but one person is more interested in saving money and one person is maybe a little more interested in spending money. And that's okay. But as we'll talk about, there are ways to deal with this and, you know, not end up in divorce court.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before to some extent. I save, but I'm the spender in our relationship. I do both. But mm-hmm. I just spend more money. And that's where the it's not so much conflict. It's just I stress out Rob because he doesn't want me to spend money on anything.
Right. And that's a very common attitude. And I would like Rob to note that you just said that you do just about everything in the marriage, that you're responsible for all of it. And happy Valentine's Day, Rob.
That's right. And shut up. No, I'm just kidding. let's talk about where should we start? Where should couples with money conflicts start?
Yeah, by acknowledging each other's point, and typically, like we mentioned, that there's someone who has more of a tendency to spend and another one who has more of a tendency to save. It's kind of like having a brake pedal and a gas pedal in a car. They are both good, but one person wants to hit the gas, the other one wants to put the brake, and you can't do that at the same time. The saver is generally concerned about financial security, about, you know, in the future, what are we going to have and how are we going to survive? And then wasting money. And the spender has a right to waste money where if it's money that's spent on something that gives that person enjoyment or maybe doesn't follow along with what the other person wants to spend on, they still have the right to spend that money. Neither person is bad. It's just who they are. And how long have you been married now, Joy?
31 years.
Okay, congratulations. In a row?
Yes.
In a row? Good. Okay, I've got, I think we've got 19 years down for me. Let's just tell other people out there, this is not a reason to not get married, but we don't change, and neither will they over that period of time. We might get a little better. We might come to an agreement, but if you think you're going to marry someone and then change that person to be the person you want them to be, vouch for me with me on this, Joy. It's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen, and that's why you should choose someone who is easygoing about your bad habits.
Yes.
So after we acknowledge each other's habits or points, then what?
Well, figure out how much you're currently spending on everything. Start writing it down and track the amounts. And if you can't do it with the pen and the paper and a spreadsheet and a calculator, go to a site like mint.com or ynab.com. That stands for You Need a Budget. Mint is free. It's an advertising-supported site. YouNeedABudget.com is a paid service. And then start tracking this at least for 30 to 90 days, but hopefully for a whole year so that you can kind of deal with the seasonal swings and say, well, gee, 1 month, you know, we went on a trip, so obviously that's not going to be true every single month, hopefully. So you can get kind of a baseline and say, in a typical month, here's where our money goes and here's how much we spend.
Yeah, shouldn't we make sure that we can sustain that spending?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. See, if you keep spending that much now, and then with the other events that might come up, that might be near term, like someone might lose a job or choose not to work, you might have to pay for college for the kids, or you really need to save for retirement, and it's okay to spend money on trips. Trips are one of the best things you can spend money on if you can afford to do it. And if you can still meet all of those different goals, then figure out how much cushion you have. How much can you spend above and beyond what you're already spending on that's on, you know, non-necessities, if you will. And then if you can't, and you say, well, there's no way we can save for retirement or go on trips or pay our student loans off, then you have to figure out how to spend less and save more.
Yeah. What about if it's obvious we're going to have to cut back a little bit? How do couples deal with that?
Yeah, that's the tricky part. And what you have to do is you have to figure out what's a sustainable amount that you can spend and then agree on that and set the limit on. And it can be on things like, you know, eating out or hobbies, you know, golfing or sport or what have you. And then figure out what that dollar amount is for both members of the relationship. And it usually should be equal. Sometimes people say, well, I make $70,000 a year. He only makes $30,000. Therefore, I should be able to spend at least twice as much as he does. No, it's usually better off if you give yourselves limits. It might be $100 a week, but have that be the limit. Then give the partner the freedom to spend that however he or she wants to. And if they don't spend that much, they can carry it over to the next month. So if they only spend 50 of the $100 this month or this week, then next week they might get $150 to spend on discretionary items. But do not allow them to go into the future and borrow against that and say, gee, I really want to buy this thing, but I only have $80 left this week to spend. Can I get my $100 for next week for that? Because that just creates more problems.
Well, I'm still thinking about that allowance idea. I suppose that would make a saver happy. Any other words of wisdom?
Yeah, the allowance should make the saver happy, but the saver has to agree that once you both have come to a conclusion that this amount is good and allowable, that the spender can do whatever she wants with it for that $100 a week or whatever it is. You can't say, oh, geez, why did you buy that? Or you already have one of those or whatever. You say, hey, this is my $100. I don't want any comments on it, and I don't want any resentment as long as I stay within our agreed-upon limit.
I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley. Kevin is a financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, and we welcome your personal finance questions for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Nate in Platteville is with us. Hi, Nate.
Hi, Joy and Kevin. I'm a UW-Platteville student. I'm going to be graduating this year with my electrical engineering degree. And I live about a half hour away, so I really enjoy listening to your guys' show on the way to school.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Nate.
So I'm using my GI Bill to get my bachelor's degree, and my wife and I have been married about 7 years. And between student loan, credit card, and car loans, we've got about $25,000 in debt and about $30,000 saved in retirement funds, index fund or a 2050 mutual fund. Obviously, since I'm graduating, we're going to be looking at, moving, buying a house. What is some general advice that you guys would have for a not so young, but a couple looking for a new part of their life?
Yeah, well, they help us out here. How not so young are you?
I'm 30, and my wife's 2 years younger.
Oh, geez. You just basically got 1 foot in the grave, you poor thing.
Yeah, you're young enough, Nate.
Geez, Nate, you're like...
already half gray and everything.
Well, I'll tell you this. You're also you're half the age of a good chunk of people listening to this show right now. So good for you. You're off to a great start. And... I know UW-Platteville's engineering department well enough that a EE degree from there is going to give you a fantastic income, and great job security, and an enjoyable job, too. So that's very important. I'm glad to hear you're using their GI benefits to this goal. When it comes to this, you know, what kind of time frame are you looking for a house?
I told my wife, I was like, you know, maybe we should rent a year and kind of figure out the area, because my parents moved around quite a bit. And, you know, not every house was the greatest, where, you know, maybe living, you know, renting for a year would have been better to find a nicer neighborhood or whatever. So, you know, really we're open to renting. We rent right now, love our house that we're in. But obviously, you know, in the Platteville area, there isn't as many jobs as there will be in Madison or Appleton or Chicago or wherever we get a job.
Yeah, please rent. I beg of you to rent. And don't worry about, housing prices are going up or interest rates are going up or whatever. Those things are going to happen. They're going to go up and down. Don't worry about that at all. Rent, because not only do you get a lot more freedom, you're going to have enough stressors in terms of starting new jobs, adjusting to a new location. Mm-hmm. You also don't need to have the stress of finding a house and having that be predicated on applying for a mortgage, getting the mortgage, having the offer accepted, getting into the house, getting it fixed up the way you need it to be. It's much more fun to do it if you can do it as kind of a hobby. And many younger couples, and you are a younger couple, many younger couples actually make it a hobby where they, when they move to a place, they rent, and then they have fun exploring different neighborhoods and kind of just thinking about different possibilities and talking about, well, yeah, why would we want to live here? Gee, that doesn't sound good to me. And it's actually a good way to kind of feel each other out for future plans and what the other would do. Some people might say, well, we need a place close to a good school. Another one says, why? We're not going to have any kids. And they say, oh, well, then we should talk about that first before we decide if we're going to buy a house. So, I'd please rent. You will save more money. You'll get a better idea of where you want to be. And there are a lot of people in the age, especially in your generation, who are never going to be homeowners. And that's not a bad thing. You know, America has a much higher rate of homeownership than most of the other industrialized nations, but it also means that we get caught up in owning a home, and sometimes, as you just mentioned, that's not the best thing. I'm a homeowner, I like it, but it's not always the best thing. I also have an apartment that I rent as well, and so I think it's a case of doing what's right at that particular time, and in my opinion, what's right for you is to rent.
Perfect. Well, if I could take up one more minute of your time.
Absolutely.
So I heard you saying that the stock market may be petering off. So I've got probably $8,000 in an index fund. Is it time to move that to something a little more conservative?
Well, we don't know if it'll be petering off, and we don't want to denigrate anyone named Peter out there. We don't know, and it's more a case of your long-range goals for the money. If you say this is money you're saving for a down payment on a house in the next year, I'd rather have you keep it safe and not going to make anything on it, but you're not going to lose anything on it. If you say, no, this is in my retirement account, I'm not going to use this for at least 30 years, I have other money I can use for emergencies. No, stock prices are going to go up, they're going to go down, and we don't know what the future is going to bring, especially in the very long term. It's more likely to go up than to go down, and so if you have a very long-range perspective on that, you're better off leaving it in stocks and then compartmentalizing it away from money you might use for emergencies or for a down payment for a house.
Thank you, Nate, for the call. And not to pry into your privacy, Kevin, but to stop any rumors, you own a home and you rent because you have offices in Eau Claire and Madison.
That's right? Correct. And I got tired of staying in very nice hotels in Madison, but I'm down there so much that I needed a permanent place that I could keep my stuff and not have to worry about it. So, yes, we have an apartment in Madison. And it's one of those things that, you know, we talk about spending and saving. I drive the nice, in quotation marks, car in our relationship, and that car has 105,000 miles on it. But so that doesn't matter to us. But it does matter to us that this is a place that works for us, for our family, and for my work. And so we have that. And that's how people should spend their money. They should zero out their expenses on things that don't matter to them or don't give them any enjoyment, and then focus their spending on things that they really like and get a lot of pleasure out of.
Perfect. Justin in Madison, we'll try to fit you in. Can you be brief, Justin?
Yes, great. Good morning. Hey, just like your last caller, I'm 30 years old and a recent graduate a year ago from UW-Madison. Because I squandered my 20s partying and having a good time, we don't have anything saved for retirement. We have a house. We do own our house. We have about $40,000 in equity and about the same amount in student loans. But we don't have anything put aside for retirement whatsoever. We're getting by, but I'd like to have some insight as to what we could do to make up for that lost time.
Justin, and that trust me, the older you get, the less likely that will seem like squandered time and lost time. That was the wise way to spend your 20s. You look really dumb doing that in your 40s and 50s.
Yes.
So you're better off doing it in your 20s and you get it out of your system. If you have a work-sponsored retirement plan and you make more than $100,000 for a married couple filing jointly, you definitely have to put it into the pre-tax plan like a 401k or a 403b. But if you're kind of short on funds, and or you are in a lower income bracket, use the Roth IRA. You don't get any tax break on it, but you can contribute up to $5,500 each, and you can pull the contributions back out whenever you want with no taxes or no penalties at any time and for any reason. And therefore, that can kind of serve as your rainy day fund or money maybe that you might need to use in the future for a house down payment or something. And so, again, if you're in the upper income brackets, use the pre-tax plan. If you're in the lower ones, use your Roth IRA.
Good luck, Justin. What's the website of the week, Kevin?
Well, we've been talking about couples, money, and a few weeks ago we were talking about farming. The Bluebird Hill Farm Essay Contest. This is a organic farm in North Carolina where you can put in for a 200-word essay on why you should be the owner of this farm. You and your partner, it specifically says in the guidelines, you and your partner, you have to pay $300 to enter, but the farm is worth $450,000, and the contest ends on June 1st. It's a beautiful farm. I think it's 21 acres, organically certified. Bluebird Hill Farm Essay Contest.com, and we'll have a link up to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
Cool. Four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley is a financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. Thanks to Bill Martins for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is On Your Money on the Ideas Network.